Welcome to the Wrestling Brethren Podcast. This is episode 409. Tonight we talk SmackDown, Collision, and the Wrestling News. With me tonight is Seth Zillman. Seth, how the hell are you?
409. Save my pennies, save my dimes. Well, can't get a brand new 409 anymore. But I had to make that Beach Boys reference and ready to talk some wrestling. Things are kind of getting back to normal. You know, we don't have like 25 hours of wrestling to watch in a day, so let's kick back a little.
All right, we will kick things off with the wrestling news headlines. On Saturday, April 13th, we had an update provided by Big E on his future. He tweeted out, "Hey all, 2-year neck scans are in, things are unchanged. My C1 has healed fibrously, but has not formed new bone. I'm not medically cleared, and truthfully, I may never be cleared. But I am blessed to be free of pain, immensely happy, and otherwise healthy. Life is good." So, from the time this injury happened, I was pretty well set in the fact that he was never going to be coming back, because that he's very lucky to be alive.
Yeah. A guy that big should not be taking suplexes on the floor. I mean, I know I'm not a wrestler, but that's a pretty big red flag, I think, for anybody.
Yeah. And as long as he's good and his life is good. And I just saw earlier today that he's now dating Mia Yim's sister. So, and he's happy, so good. Good for mm-hmm. him.
Yeah. Ultimately, in the end, his happiness is what matters most in all of this. So if he's cool with his career ending the way it did, because, I mean, he did. I mean, he was a WWE champion for a while. He gets to add his name to that list. And he's charismatic enough. There's a lot of things he could do for that company. He could probably do commentary if he wanted. He could. And obviously, New Day already have a podcast, so he's got that as well. So for a guy that charismatic, I mean, yeah, it's probably sad for fans that we might not see him wrestle again, but they say when one door closes, another one opens. So, you know, if he's happy, then I think we should all be happy.
Agreed. Next news headline. New Japan ran Windy City Riot in Chicago on Friday night, and John Moxley won the IWGP World Heavyweight title for the first time and became mm-hmm. the first wrestler to hold world titles in WWE, AEW, and New Japan Pro. Congrats out to John Moxley.
Yeah, that is a huge feather in the cap. I did watch that show. I didn't attend because it sold out like pretty quickly. I mean, I was hearing there were like 200 tickets left or something like that, but it was effectively a sold out show. A lot of crazy stuff happened on that. A lot of great wrestling, because as our longtime listeners may know, New Japan's actually my favorite promotion, not AEW. And I had said off mic, I said I thought I was being generous by saying Moxley had maybe a 5% chance of winning the title. And lo and behold, he won the title. So my hunch is this is an angle that will lead into the next Forbidden Door. But like I said, heck of a feather in his cap. It will, I'm sure, will raise the interest of AEW somewhat, at least on a global scale. Maybe, who knows, we might have an AEW show in Japan. We might have a joint show in Japan done. That'll probably be the best of all worlds. So, yeah, congrats to him. And in other news, I believe Zack Sabre Jr. won back the TV title from them by beating Matt Riddle. So there was another title that changed hands.
Yeah. And for those who mentioned that after WrestleMania on Sunday, it was the first time since the year 2020 that a member of the Shield did not hold the world championship. Well, that lasted all of 5 days. There was a WWE talent relations update earlier in the week as the company got rid of the EVP of talent, Dan Ventrell, was let go from his job after a year and a half with the company. And according to Fightful Select, Ventrell was seemingly not adored by talent on a professional level, as they had heard of several pointing the finger at him as a reason why many deals have nearly reached expiration. They were told that he was actively discussing several new deals at the time of his return, but several within the industry didn't feel as if he was an appropriate fit in the position he was in negotiating deals with talent. In recent months, it's been reported that Drew McIntyre, Becky Lynch, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, and now Natalya all have their deals coming up much sooner than would typically be the case before negotiating. Natalya is the company's longest tenured female wrestler. So I know they've already appointed those responsibilities to other people. So it will be interesting this summer to see who resigns, who becomes a free agent, or in some people's cases, who might actually retire. So this summer could be very interesting for WWE talent that all have their deals coming up. And it's worth noting that Becky and Seth are both taking hiatuses for a little while post WrestleMania. And that seems to line up with the amount of time left on their deals. So things get shaken up, and not just by the draft.
Yeah. This is the type of stuff we used to hear back in the Monday Night War days, where people would disappear in the final weeks or months of their contract. So you don't have somebody on one company one day and literally on the next day, like, you know, Lex Luger and Rick Rude famously did during the early days of the Monday Night War. So that makes sense from a business standpoint. Some of these talents, I mean, pretty big talents like Drew and Becky and Seth and all that, I mean, if they're not main eventers, they're right at that upper tier to main event. And like I said, Natty, I mean, she might not be a main eventer, but she's a hell of a hand in the ring. She can work with just about anybody. So even if you're not going to push her to the moon, I think she's a valuable addition to anybody's roster. But right now, the landscape is much better for the talent than it has been since the Monday Night War, because there's other companies now that could be viable alternatives for them to go. You know, supposedly one of the reasons why Will Ospreay chose AEW was because he wouldn't have to move to the States. You know, I think that's what the talk of the grind really meant, was, you know, the hectic schedules that WWE talent have. So, you know, if people can make similar amounts of money and be able to sleep in their own beds more nights, you know, that's worth a lot to a lot of talent.
This is true. And the final news headline, there's been an update on NXT's participation in this year's WWE draft. As I had questioned on a previous episode with Ava's presence on Monday Night Raw in the same room with the other two general managers. And so Fightful Select once again comes through with a report, and I'm just going to read the beginning part of it, but the WWE draft is fast approaching with a renewed focus on NXT's part in the event on WWE television. There have been a few question marks over NXT's role in the draft, one being the possibility of main roster talent being drafted to NXT. Fightful Select's Corey Brennan has learned from sources close to the NXT creative process that this is not just a tease with the Final Testament and Ivar's appearances on this past Tuesday's edition of NXT, setting the stage for other main roster stars to make the jump during the event as part of a renewed focus on making NXT the third brand of WWE once again. So that is interesting. And like I had said previously, it will be, if they can get not only NXT involved, but a more professional look and feel to the draft. Not maybe professional is not the right word, but less hokey and vanilla would be maybe perhaps a better description. And it's also going down the same week as the NFL draft, which was done on purpose. So, you know, they're trying to get all the football fans who are into draft fever for the week to keep that momentum going on Friday and the following Monday. So that will be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. If they are adding it into the mix, that can get the brand out. And it makes sense with them going to CW instead of cable. You know, that's quite possibly could bring them into a lot of new viewers. And if they are serious about making it a third brand and make it seem less like developmental, then they'll need to add stars. I mean, that we know that's why Baron Corbin and guys like that are there, is because the way for rookies to get better, the best way for you to get better, really not just in wrestling, but in life, is to work with people who are better than you at what you want to be at. So yeah, put some veterans in NXT and give the brand some more credibility. Seems like that's a sound plan.
Oh my God, Roman Leakey has been drafted back to NXT. For those who don't know, that was his character name in FCW/NXT.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we had SmackDown, the post-WrestleMania SmackDown, Friday night in Detroit, Michigan. It led off with an in-ring promo from the champ, Cody Rhodes. And what's interesting to note, it was announced on Monday this way by Samantha, but also announced on Friday this exact same way. Cody was introduced as the undisputed WWE champion. So on TV, they're leaving off the universal part. But if we go to WWE.com, his picture is still listed as undisputed WWE Universal Champion. So I don't know if they're trying to phase out the universal part of it so that it's more of a continued lineage from the WWE title or what the deal is. But it's interesting to note that that's what they've been calling him.
Yeah, especially since if you go to the WWE website, specifically the Superstars page, WWE.com/superstars, he's listed twice. He's listed as a Universal Champion and the WWE Champion. So maybe that's just they haven't updated the site yet, but it's kind of odd that they still list both titles as separate when the whole idea was Roman unified them and got a new belt because of it.
I think they've since updated it. That might have been earlier in the week because I only see him one time here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe my cookies are behind or something.
Yeah, but I know for the longest time, Roman had two pictures on here. So, All right. Well, in this promo, he was kind of vanilla, kind of generic. He was basically putting over each of the six competitors in the two separate triple threat matches that were going on this night to determine who would be facing him at Backlash in Paris. So nothing really of note here in this promo, just a babyface champion, can't wait to see who my challenger is type of promo.
Yeah. And another thing that's funny about that is if you go to that promo on YouTube, it says for the title, at least it's at WWE on Fox, Cody Rhodes reveals what The Rock gifted him. It's like, but he didn't. You know, that implies whatever he gave him in his hand there. You know, the plans to Luke Skywalker or something, whatever, you know, when he cupped his hand over or something like that. So it's like total clickbait headline. It says Cody reveals what The Rock gifted him, but he doesn't even talk about what The Rock gave him. Just that he's going to be coming back.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that, but I don't want to speak on it without having seen it again, but we can.
If I'm wrong, I welcome being correct.
I have no idea. That was not the thing I was going back and watching multiple times. Well, that was the next
understandable
couple of segments. Backstage, Paul Heyman, Jimmy Uso, and Solo Sikoa arrive to find that they no longer occupy the quote unquote suite of the locker room for the designated for the champion. Kevin Owens walks past the bloodline and says that they're not invited inside and there's a broom closet waiting over there for them.
Which is a total Kevin Owens line.
Yeah. Solo tells Paul Heyman that he'll take care of Owens and then he'll take care of the locker room situation. But Heyman reminds Solo that winning and losing is everything. Dig it, AEW. Yeah. There are consequences to losing. They lost and Cody Rhodes is the champion. If they want their locker room back, the title has to come back to the bloodline. And that's by order of the tribal chief. Words to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had the first of the two triple threat matches between LA Knight, Bobby Lashley, and Santos Escobar. And this was won by LA Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he will challenge the winner of the other triple threat next week in a one-on-one. And the winner of that will face Cody at Backlash. Yep. Then we had
sound booking there.
Yep. Yeah. Then we had an in-ring segment that featured the bloodline. And I'm just going to read the transcription of what Paul and Solo said and then wrap it up and then we can get our thoughts on it. Paul started by saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Heyman. Tonight, by order of the tribal chief, the bloodline offers no excuses about what happened at WrestleMania. We don't blame John Cena. We don't blame The Undertaker. We don't even blame Jey Uso. Ladies and gentlemen, accountability is a very big word on the island of relevancy, and your tribal chief, Roman Reigns, has ordered that we accept accountability. At WrestleMania 39, what happened? Roman Reigns entered the ring focused. Roman entered the ring strategic. Roman Reigns entered the ring unemotional. Cody Rhodes took his eye off the ball for just 1 second. He was distracted by Solo. Admittedly, that's Cody Rhodes' fault for not preparing for Solo to distract him. And what happened? Just like that, your tribal chief took advantage and successfully defended the title. At WrestleMania 40, Cody Rhodes flipped the script on Roman Reigns. What did Seth Rollins say? Seth Rollins is a visionary. Seth Rollins told the truth. Seth Rollins said to Cody Rhodes, I will be your shield. The one piece of unfinished business in Roman Reigns' life. So when Roman Reigns had a chair in his hand at WrestleMania 40 and he could have smashed Cody Rhodes with it, legal, bloodline rules, he didn't. Why? Because after 10 years of waiting for revenge on Seth Rollins, for waiting on revenge of that betrayal in and of the Shield, Roman Reigns gave in to temptation. Roman Reigns was distracted by his lust for revenge on Seth Rollins. He took his eye off the ball. Cody Rhodes was prepared. Cody Rhodes was strategic. Cody Rhodes was focused. Cody Rhodes was ready. And just like that, it was over. Ladies and gentlemen, your new undisputed champion is Cody Rhodes. But like a phoenix rising from the ashes, your tribal chief, and just as he's about to get out, Roman Reigns, Solo Sikoa, like, stares down Paul Heyman to get him to stop talking. And Solo says, losing and winning matters, right? Paul shakes his head, right? So there are consequences to losing, right? Paul says, right? So that means consequences lead to change. Solo switches his focus to Jimmy. Solo gives Jimmy a hug, which was very reminiscent of Roman Reigns hugging Jay. And Solo tells Jimmy that he loves him.
And Heyman, for that matter.
Right. Solo tells Jimmy that he's his brother and he loves him. And he walks and turns away from Jimmy. And he's attacked by a hooded figure, the dreaded hooded figure. And it turns out it is the debuting Tama Tonga from New Japan, or I should say formerly from New Japan. Now, they did say his name. They did say he is the son of Haku. And for those wondering, no, he is not Samoan. But as we've stated on this podcast several times, Haku has always been called Uncle by The Rock, by other members of the Anoa'i family. So they are considered family. So Tama tees off on Jimmy. Solo tells Tama to pick Jimmy up, and Solo proceeds to deliver four straight Samoan spikes. Tama throws up the ones, and Solo pulls Heyman over, and they all throw up the ones, while in the other hand, Paul takes his phone and does his little call Roman, but before he can finish Reigns, Solo snatches the cell phone out of his hand, throws it on the phone, and smashes it with his foot, at least as best you can smash a flat phone. Solo tells Tama to go get a chair. Solo brings Jimmy to the corner and wraps the chair around Jimmy's neck. Solo once again tells Jimmy that he loves him, kisses him on the head, and as he backs up before delivering the attack, Heyman says, "This is not what the tribal chief wants." Solo nails Jimmy with the running hip attack, and Jimmy slumps to the mat. Solo walks out of the ring with Heyman and Tama Tonga, and it looks like Jimmy is out and Tama is in.
Yeah, they basically pulmonized his neck there. And I've, of course, been singing Tama Tonga's praises for years because I've been seeing him in New Japan for years. So he's going to be a good addition. And there's a lot of ways they could go here because it definitely seemed like Paul was told one thing and the Bloodline was told another. So is Roman pulling the strings here, or is some, what's the word I'm looking for? Mutiny or coup could be going on, because just the way it sounded like on the surface at first was that Heyman was not in on this and they were just doing this without his knowledge or consent. But then, you know, why would he smash the phone like that? But because we're supposed to be, if I understand it right, we're supposed to believe that Heyman had Roman on the phone there during that whole thing, the phone that was smashed. So
no, not had him on the phone.
He was about to call him.
He always tells Siri to call Roman Reigns. So he hadn't even made the call yet because Solo snatched it out before the call could be completed.
Okay, yeah, so that does lend it to, it looks like Heyman was just left out of the loop in this one.
Yeah, I'll get to my thoughts after I describe the next backstage segment.
That, but that basically covers my thoughts for the episode. So
yeah. Next, we had the returning Cameron Grimes. I was like, oh, great, Cameron Grimes. And then they revealed his opponent was Bron Breakker. I was like, son of a bitch, this guy can't catch a break. So Bron Breakker did Bron Breakker things. Bron has a new theme song for his entrance, which I'm getting tired of them killing the cool NXT themes with generic main roster themes, but that's for another episode. Then we cut backstage. Kayla Braxton is standing in front of the trainer's room looking for a medical update on Jimmy Uso. Paul Heyman walks out of the room with a despondent look on his face. Kayla asks Heyman if Jimmy is okay and what happened out there. Heyman's face turns to fear as Tama Tonga appears, and Tama says, "By order of the tribal chief," and he walks off. And Solo appears, and he flexes his taped thumb, smirks, and walks off. Heyman says, "What the hell is that supposed to mean?" And they go to commercial. Now, a lot of people online are saying, oh, it's The Rock, it's the final boss, he's the new tribal chief, blah, 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 blah. I don't buy that. And I don't buy that because he's not going to be around for a while. And I don't think they're going to insinuate that Rock is pulling the strings from afar through Solo. I don't buy that. The better story is that Solo is assuming the position of tribal chief because of Roman's absence, because that's how they've been building this the whole time. Roman has stated in a previous promo that if anything happens to me, Solo is next in line to be tribal chief. He has said those words in a promo on television. There's been the numerous times that Roman has bumped Solo and numerous times that Roman has shown fear for Solo. There's also been times that Solo has been eyeballing the title, eyeballing the Ulafala, which are those red beads. This, I feel, we were talking about how do you make Roman babyface? And we're like, oh, Rock versus Roman. Well, this might be how you make Roman babyface, because we already have babyface Jay. They just threw Jimmy out of the bloodline, or bloodline 2.0, if you will. So Jimmy can be recruited by Jay. Whenever Roman comes back, this would be the most natural and organic babyface turn, because you don't even have to do anything to Roman's character, except he's going to be getting different reactions. So for Survivor Series, perhaps, could we get OG Bloodline versus Bloodline 2.0, Solo, Tama, perhaps the debuting Jacob Fatu versus Roman and the Usos, and maybe even Sami Zayn, all baby faces now? That is a continuation of long-term storytelling, which is what Roman has said that he's been wanting to do, and this is why this works. He said so in his documentary on A&E a couple of weeks ago. So that's my theory on how this is going to go, and I'm here for it. We were wondering how the bloodline was going to get lit up again, and we've just seen the start of it.
Yeah, like I said, many different ways they could go here. You know, like I said, they could be leaving Paul out of the loop. It could be Roman turning good. It could be a double cross by The Rock. Lots of ways they could go. So once again, 4 years into this, 3 or 4 years into the story, and we still have logical progression, like you just said. So I think it's one of the reasons why WWE's been as hot as it's been lately.
Yeah, we didn't get NXT debuts on this SmackDown after Mania, but I think this was a decent substitution. So. Next, we had an in-ring segment with Bayley's championship celebration. She mentions giving an opportunity to someone deserving, but before she can finish, she's interrupted by Tiffany Stratton, who assumes that she's accepting an open challenge. But Bayley said she never issued an open challenge, and she already had someone in mind, Naomi. Naomi comes out and says she can't take on Bayley just yet because she needs to put Tiffy in her place tonight. And they're about to have a match. And I have one big, giant problem with this. You have Naomi back on SmackDown on the same show and brand as her husband, Jimmy Uso, who was just taken out and is in dire straits in medical. She didn't have any selling whatsoever of being upset about her husband. It was just happy-go-lucky Naomi, babyface, la la la, I'm taking my revenge on Tiffany, and la, like nothing ever happened.
Yeah, because then they've acknowledged their marriage on camera, so it's not like this is a wink-wink, nudge-nudge thing.
I'm not asking for her to be part of the bloodline. I'm just asking for a little distracted Naomi because she's concerned about her husband. That's it. You could have even had Naomi coming out of the room with Paul and Naomi continuing on to the ring while Paul was interviewed by Kayla. Nothing tying those two together. And that stuck in my craw for the rest of the night. The little details, and usually Paul's good about that stuff. And I think they just missed an opportunity there. But anyway,
you could have just simply done a thing on the, she could come out and say, you know, I'm honored that you want me, but it's like, I don't want to fight somebody I like right now. I want to fight somebody I don't like because I'm in a bad mood over what happened to my husband.
Right. Just something. I just left medical. I'm amped up, whatever. Anyway, Naomi, I guess with her lack of concern, defeated Tiffany, which I believe this was Tiffy's first loss on the main roster, if you don't count Elimination Chamber. Then we had Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair defeat Chelsea Green and the returning Piper Niven back from a broken hand, which is why she's been off TV. And during this match, there was a glitch interruption. And if you were able to pause the TV fast enough, which I was not, but thank God other people on the internet did, there's a little message in the corner that said, "You forgot about us." And there was also a glitch on Raw that I didn't mention, but in the corner of that one, it just said, "Hello." So for those who aren't aware, this is all pointing to the return of Uncle Howdy, or at least whatever character Bo Dallas will be upon his return. So I'm glad that they're continuing on in Bray's legacy and Bray's memory and continuing with his creativity. Obviously, no one was closer to him than Bo was. So I am here for round two of the Easter eggs and whatever we get moving forward.
Yeah, and when he does debut, I think I'm stating the obvious. There's no way they can have him anything other than a baby face. You know, the people are going to have so much sympathy for him. There's no way you're going to be able to make him a bad guy. So
right.
Might as well bring him in as a good guy.
He might be one of those lovely tweeners that everybody loves to talk about, because you got to keep some of the creepy element in there. Otherwise, mm-hmm. It's a totally different character, which is possible, I guess, but we'll have to see. Backstage, Byron Saxton interviews Kevin Owens, and Kevin is talking about the new cool camera angles that you've seen on Raw and SmackDown, and he says he wants to try that out, and he borrows the mic from Byron, and he asks the cameraman to follow him, and he's talking about being in the triple threat title match, and then he happens to walk past a table that has some merch on it. And of course, the one thing standing out is a Detroit Tigers, because they're in Detroit, championship title belt. And he picks it up, and only Kevin could have delivered this. Kevin says, "Hey, I like Tigers." He goes, "I'm keeping this." And he slings it over his shoulder like he's the champion of the Detroit Tigers. And then in one of the piles of t-shirts is piles of CM Punk shirts. And without saying a word, he just flicks them off the table, which I literally laughed out loud, because they don't get along for whatever reason, but it's not as bad as any of Punk's things in AEW, but they just have a personality clash or whatever it is, but it's subtle. And I like the fact that Kevin just knocked the Punk shirts off the concession table.
And the guy working the table just kind of looking like, shrugs like, okay.
Yeah, I'll pick
like what's
up.
He gonna do, say no?
Yeah, I got nothing better to do, I'll just pick him up. So he walked all the way to Gorilla with the cameraman focusing on him, and he says Jamie,
yeah,
take my mic. And then he says, Bruce, hit my music, and referring to Bruce Pritchard, I'm assuming. I just thought that was hilarious. Mm-hmm. And his music starts, and he walks through the curtain, and then the other curtain with the Tiger's belt. The whole thing was great.
Yeah, and I guess now we know how music gets hit. Apparently, the guys just run out, and apparently Bruce Pritchard can't say no to playing somebody's music when they ask it. You know, it's just in their contract or something. He has to hit the play button.
When there's a promo happening, the other guy's just standing there. If he mentions my name, you hit play. And I'm going out there, damn it. Or in some cases, you have to say, I'm standing here, and if he says my name 15 times, the first 14, he gets a pass. But on the 15th one, you hit my music. Then we had the main event, which was the other triple threat match, AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, and Rey Mysterio. And you could see who was going to win this based on who won the first one. And we are getting our WrestleMania rematch as AJ Styles defeated Kevin Owens and Rey Mysterio as he hit an avalanche AJ Styles. Oy vey. An avalanche Styles clash onto Kevin Owens through Rey Mysterio, if that makes sense, and then pins Kevin Owens. Or yeah, pins
I think he'd done something like that in TNA back in the day. Basically, he was on the second rope with the Styles Clash and just basically did the Styles Clash onto the guy that was on the mat.
Crazy ending, but AJ Styles wins. LA Knight comes out and they have a face-to-face and they start trash talking, and that is how we go off the air. So next week, AJ versus LA, and I have a feeling we are going to get Cody versus AJ Styles in Paris, France, which will be interesting because somebody posted online that in TNA, AJ actually did wrestle Dusty, and now he can wrestle Cody.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll even weave that into the storyline, so who knows?
Yep. I remember that match when it happened. It was in the weekly pay-per-view days. He wrestled Dusty, and the title was on the line, too. So, and it was like 15 minutes, so Dusty was like late 50s and still doing 15-minute matches.
Nice. All right, as far as AEW, I did not watch either show, but I heard and I read that Rampage was kind of just meh in there, so we won't talk about that.
Yeah.
On Collision, they had matches where the House of Black defeated Matt Sydal, Dante Martin, and Action Andretti. Shibata defeated Lee Moriarty. Daniel Garcia defeated Serpentico. Tony Storm defeated AZM in a eliminator match. And in the main event, the BCC of Claudio and Brian Danielson defeated the Don Callis family of Kyle Fletcher and Powerhouse Hobbs. And in the post-match, Takeshita attacks Brian Danielson with a brainbuster on the ramp, because apparently the Don Callis has a hit out on Brian Danielson for whatever reason. So,
yeah, well, because remember, technically, at least they're trying to say that Ospreay is still in the Don Callis family. So right. I think, you know, that's where that story's going.
Yeah. When I read the description from the person who gave the results, they described it as, after a dismal week of AEW programming, this was a solid 2 hours of wrestling. And if they can just get back to the good wrestling and improve upon the storytelling, they can get back on track.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the Dynasty card, it is stacked in terms of good wrestlers able to do good wrestling. So we will be talking about Dynasty, I believe, later this week. We might be making our predictions. I think Dynasty is a week from today, actually, as we're recording, which is also Jarrett's birthday. So for his birthday, he gets Brian Danielson.
It's a week from today, I believe it's the 21st.
Yeah. So later in the week, we will make our predictions, probably on the Saturday show. And we will talk more AEW throughout the week. So any final thoughts?
Oh, well, I also haven't seen Collision yet, so I can't comment on it. But yeah, that pay-per-view looks like it's going to be top to bottom great. I did hear, I think it was Brian Alvarez that had said, and that he was hearing from within the company, that now that the footage has aired, you know, for whatever, that Tony Khan kind of got that out of his system. And now if it's out of his system, that means they can just get back to the basic business, which is, of course, just running your wrestling show. So hopefully that was the end of this whole footage and FTR and all that jazz. You know, they can just go back to paying attention to their own superstars.
Got it.
But other than that, everything's great.
Thus implying he's a toddler.
Yeah. It was put into his system in the first place. You know?
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. Well, hopefully Tony can move on and book his shows better. So our next episode will be the recap of Raw, recap of NXT as we get closer to the WWE draft, which will happen the week after Dynasty. So until then, once again, thank you for downloading, listening, and subscribing, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. Visit the mothership, if you will, at twbpodcast.com, the online home of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments on Twitter /X at twbpshow, on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthesquaredcircle, and on Instagram at The Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter /X at The Bacon Rev. You can follow Seth at Lord Xandrax. And you can follow Josh at Southpaw Josh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you soon with more from The Wrestling Brethren.